Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Taste the Mediterranean through March 19th at Whole Foods Market. Save on animal welfare certified bone-in beef short ribs, sustainable wild-caught sockeye salmon, and more. Find sales on Parmigiano-Reggiano, charcuterie and ground lamb. Grab an olive boule bread from the bakery. Plus, wines from the Mediterranean start at just $8.99. Taste the Mediterranean now at Whole Foods Market. Must be 21 plus. Please drink responsibly.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. And this week, I've got the one and only Jody Harsh on. Jody has been doing this for years. Big drag queen from the UK. And I love everything she puts out. It's just amazing. I came across her during lockdown, and I was like, what's going on here? And then followed all of her socials and started listening to her music, and really got involved with kind of the message that she's pushing out. So I wanted to get her on the podcast. So, without further ado, Jody Harsh. Jody Harsh, what's cooking?
I am good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Can't complain. Just got up early. I'm in Detroit at the moment, so got up early.
What time is it there?
It's 10 o'clock in the morning.
Nice. Are you an early riser?
Yeah, I was up at like 6:30 this morning.
Trying to be an early riser now. I'm trying to work out every morning.
Yeah,
I do a Barry's boot camp at like 7:30 in the morning. Yeah,
they're pretty rough, right?
They are rough, but I'm trying to get like my body and my mind mentally fit as everything kind of comes back now. You know, like you can't be like running around festivals and club shows and all that kind of stuff and being super unhealthy.
Do you have the lockdown love handles?
Oh, times 10. The love handles are actually like all over my entire body. So yeah, I'm just trying to get my health in order.
I have fat shamed so many of my friends.
Yeah, I did myself. I like look at the mirror going, nah, I gotta get that body back now. We're back out there.
Back on it. How was lockdown for you? Because honestly, like that's how I came across you.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's been some really interesting things that's happened in our industry, right? During COVID, and there's been a lot of negatives and a lot of positives, but I think there's actually been a lot more positives than negatives that's come out of it in the grand scheme of things. And there's some people that sadly lost their careers and kind of have just gone and done their own thing. But there's a lot of really new people that aren't necessarily new people that have been around for many years, but COVID has kind of given them a platform to get to where they're at now, and it's kind of just like brought a whole new breed of people to the industry.
Totally. To backtrack a little bit, you know, I've been around for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
I've started by throwing parties and doing clubs.
Yeah.
And that led to me being a DJ. That led to me making music. That led to me songwriting. I always say I kind of, I've done everything in the wrong order. Mm. So to get current, so when we went into lockdown, I'd been putting out tunes for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just by myself, just on my own label and just chucking stuff out there to play in my shows and stuff. And when we went into lockdown, I had COVID the week before we actually locked down here, which was the day that Boris Johnson said, you must stay at home. It was like the day when I was like, oh, I can finally go to the supermarket, I feel okay. And I was like, oh, so yeah, that's when they were saying, oh, it's just going to be a few weeks. It's just like a little thing just to get, you know, for everyone's safety. Little did we know it was going to last
18 months later.
But I was in bed with COVID the week before we locked down. My agent, lovely Chris at CAA, via my management, was sending email updates on a daily basis. Mm. This show is cancelled. This festival's cancelled.
Yeah.
Glastonbury's gone. Yeah. It looks like Glastonbury's gone. This has gone. That's got... I lost everything. I lost everything that would... Because I joined CAA, the agency, 3 months, 4 months before.
Yeah.
And so all these summer shows, it's like spring, summer 2020 shows that we'd been working on, things through them, which is everything was pulled. So I'm thinking, of course, like everyone who's self-employed or, you know, anyone creative who's not in full-time employment, I was thinking, whoa, where's my money coming from? Where's my career going?
Yeah.
Where's my, how am I, what the fuck is... thing, you know, oh no, be fine, early 2021 everything will be back, or you know, took till the sort of the end of 2021, didn't it? But so I'm a hustler through and through.
Yeah, 100%.
And it almost gave me, you know, some a flame under my ass to just kind of go, right, what the fuck can I do? Mm. How can I do it? What can I put out? What do I want to release? How where's the money coming from to do this, and where's the blah blah blah? And it's got out there and hustled. And I got a great team, which is, you know, thank God, which is amazing, and we just all put our heads together and just kind of worked out what the next steps were and where I want to be and stuff, and thought really pragmatically about it. And I never came from anything. I did, you know, my parents don't have money. They're not particularly career minded people, so anything that I achieve is stuff that I've kind of got out there myself, obviously, you know, with the team and stuff, but it's I have to go out and work. I have to do stuff, and I have to stay creatively fed and I have to stay really engaged with culture and really excited all the time. Otherwise I'll just slump into depression.
Which
really does happen when if I'm not active and busy, and if my creative parts of my brain are not engaged, I just feel like crap. So I just got to work is what I did.
And it paid off massively.
I started by doing live streaming, you know, I listened to your podcast, so I hear you talking about live streaming. Like,
talking shit on live streaming.
No, I hear you just like discussing the concept of streaming like with other DJs. And I did quite a lot of it, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it really at all. It felt really good to be able to live stream and give people some music and improve someone's Friday night, or, you know, you get the comments and little DMs like, oh, that really helped me. I've had the worst day, or I've had bad news, or I lost my job, and you know, you gave me an hour of joy. Hearing that's amazing.
Yeah.
But did I like DJing to my phone in my fucking living room? No.
Yeah.
I like the live experience.
It's been interesting because watching the whole live stream thing over COVID, because again, like I said, there's been some artists that have come out of the live stream that weren't even kind of DJing before COVID. Yeah. Like, look at Amy L. Like, she's a good friend of mine, and I've known Amy for 3 years, 3 years now. And my first interaction with her was I was going to get her on a track singing. And I think she just finished university. She hadn't DJed ever, like not DJed one bit. And then we kind of always stayed in touch. And then during COVID, she started doing Twitch every single day, and look where she's at now. And it has done some amazing things for people. LPGOB, she's exactly the same. Just like just streaming every day, and it did something special, but for me, yeah, it just wasn't.
For sure.
I'm with you on it though. It's just like,
yeah, there's just something about just DJing to an iPhone
in your pants,
kind of more in your, yeah, just going, oh, like a smile, and feeling like you have to constantly perform,
yeah,
because you're being filmed as well, and, yeah. I don't know who's watching, you know, without any energy to bounce off, because obviously that's what we all really love. Us DJs, we love that live,
yeah,
moment and the energy exchange that DJing obviously is all about. So, and then music. So I was in the studio mucking about with this sample of a tune where I got the chorus for my track My House from, and I just thought, oh, that's kind of fun and cute. And, you know, we were all locked down, so we're all in our homes. I did on the little Everybody's Welcome in My House bit, threw some drums on and worked on the bass line and stuff, and put that tune out on Another Rhythm. And then that got picked up by Warner. And then I didn't know
it went out on Another Rhythm.
It did. It first came out on Another Rhythm. Warner then upstreamed. Is it upstream?
Yeah,
they upstreamed it. 3 months later.
Oh, amazing.
And that sparked up a conversation of signing with Warner.
And it's done like, so, it did like 8 million. It's done like 8 million. I was listening to it earlier.
Yeah, 8 or 9 or something. Yeah, I mean,
I'm looking at
not bad. Yeah, not bad for a little.
Not bad for a lockdown. Yeah, 8.6. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So that sort of then started my record deal with Warner. Mm. So when I was obviously releasing music as we went into lockdown, but that's that first week where all the shows are going and I'm in bed with COVID, did I think I'd be signing to Warner fucking records? No, I didn't think that. Yeah. But that, I kind of, basically to summarize, how did I get through lockdown? I really just kind of winged it, to be honest. I thought, right, let's get going then.
For me, I just kept on releasing music. Yeah. And like I got to release some music that probably I would never have released before, like outside of COVID.
Yeah. Do you think that's because you couldn't test stuff on a dance floor because people weren't on dance floors?
I think it was because I'm just like you, I'm sure. Like I like a lot of different types of music. And with the music that we release, or for me, I can only speak for myself, but I generally release stuff that's just like club orientated that I'm going to play because it's what I'm playing in my sets.
Yeah.
But there's records like my record, like, I don't know if you've heard it, but a track called Run Run that I did with Jaded. I would probably never play that in my sets. But I got to release stuff like that kind of, it does its thing on streaming and it kind of allows me to do something a little bit different, but it's not really a Will Clark record, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And another thing about making music when we were locked down without the ability to road test stuff is the mix.
Yeah.
When I came out of lockdown and played stuff in, you know, obviously I've got great speakers at home, I've got great speakers in the studio, but when I played certain tracks that I'd put out in an actual club, oof, the mix is a bit off. that's a bit toppy. Oh my god!
I did that the other day.
That's a bit of a muddy one, bloody hell! You know, yeah.
I had that the other day with I just released a Dom Dolla remix, and my mastering guy sent me the master, and I was like, I made it in my studio in the UK, and then I was back over in America, and he sent me the master, and I was like, oh my god, what the fuck have you been doing, Will? That is an awful mix, Dan. Like the shakers were so loud, I was like, why did no one notice this? Why did no one pull this up? It's awful.
Totally. You put in like a 909 hat and literally you can't hear the vocal anymore. It's like, oh my god, it's just all hat.
I love it. So how does it feel like working as with a major? Because obviously from what I've researched on you is like comes from underground, and it comes from like underground queer clubs.
Absolutely.
And there's something that's like, is that I was listening to your playlist as well on Spotify, and there's a huge like disco influence from what I kind of get from you, which I love. But how does that work when it comes to like being working with a major where they obviously want hits?
Absolutely. I've always had a pop sensibility as well. I think I've always loved pop music, but pop music, like, I don't know, everything but Girl, Madonna, certain Madonna stuff, or, you know, when Kylie was really cool, that kind of stuff. So there has absolutely always been a commercial influence in everything I do. And, you know, doing drag and coming from my point of view, there's something so punk about, you know, queering the mainstream.
I love it.
I just think, you know, drag and underground culture now through TV shows such as Pose, RuPaul's Drag Race, which is just absolutely ginormous. There's like this huge spotlight on it, and for it to be in people's living rooms, or for it to be on people's radios, or in their car, on their favorite playlist on Spotify. There's just something so progressive and cool about that to me. So to sign to a major and have the absolute biggest platform I possibly can.
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And there's no talk of like watering down or can you go and make a record that sounds like a Joel Corey record? Or there is none of that. There's none of that kind of stuff. I do. I'm not saying I have free reign because I work closely with my A&R like to develop what I'm doing, but it's there's no selling out or anything like that. The Blessed Madonna's also on my label. She's sick. Just recently signed to Warner's as well. So actually Warner's in the UK are getting quite a good dance crew together. So it felt like the right home to me. And it feels good.
Do you know Anton?
I do. I do indeed. Yeah.
So Anton runs my label as well.
Right. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So it's they've got their fingers in really cool pies and they know what they're doing.
Yeah. They're doing cool shit. And it's actually been really interesting because house music has become a lot more commercialized in the last 2 years during COVID. Totally. And a little bit before, and with the likes of Joel. That was actually the first time I'd heard of you.
Oh, really?
You did like a TV thing with Joel and M&EK.
Did I? Yes, that makes sense. Yes.
I can't remember what it was, but
something like that. Yeah.
It was like you were they were in a bed and you were presenting something.
Right. And
I've known Joel for years. But yeah, that was the first time I kind of started to kind of take note on what you were doing. And it was really interesting. But I want to go to like the queer London night scene. Because I know nothing about it. I want to go back to like that first time. Like what is it like?
I mean, the first time I ever went to a club, I was 15, maybe 15/16, like super really young, far too young to be running around the nightclub. It was, do you remember the Astoria in Tottenham Court Road? It's been knocked down now for Crossrail.
No, I didn't know that.
We had a big queer Saturday night party, and I used to go to that every single week with fake ID, running around doing all sorts of things I shouldn't be doing. Absolutely loving it, because it's a while ago now, and so society wasn't as an accepting place as it is now. And so to go out and be in a big dance floor with loads of people whose sexualities were the same as mine or similar to mine, and just have the joy in dancing together with loads of people in a room listening to music that we all shared an interest in, just felt so, I naturally felt at home as soon as I walked in. I remember walking into the club for the very first time thinking, oh, I'm home. Yeah, okay, I've arrived. Oh, now it makes sense. Yeah. This is where I'm supposed to be. Because, of course, being a gay kid, I was the odd one out in the playground.
Yeah, of course.
I was the one when all my mates at school were kissing girls and I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, be at home listening to Prince and Madonna. I felt like I didn't belong and I didn't...
Yeah.
yeah, I just felt like the odd one out.
Were you the only gay person at school?
For sure, yeah. I don't know about now.
Yeah.
For sure back then, I certainly felt like I was.
Yeah.
And so to be in an environment where I could be myself, however that took shape,
yeah,
and just be with loads of people that sort of shared my interests and
totally
and
it felt
there's the sense of community within nightlife, I guess, is what I'm kind of getting at here. And you know, you hear people talking about, you know, the Paradise Garage being having a sense of community and a family and all that kind of stuff, and people just wanted to go and listen to Larry's music at week in, work out. And I really had that when I was like so young, like 15 fucking years old. Once I was ID'd at the door on a Saturday night, and so my group of friends, of course, were older than me. I was the youngest one, and so they said, well, let's go to Trade. I don't know if you've heard of Trade.
Yeah, I've heard of Trade.
Like a hard house club at Termels in London. Again, it's not there anymore. It's now an office block. And I got into Trade, and that was a raucous all-nighter. Saturday until like Sunday lunchtime. And there was Trade and there was Trade Light.
Yeah.
And so Trade, the main room, was like banging hard house. Like it was hard house. And then there was Trade Light. The Trade Light room next door, which was like Smoking Joe, Fat Tony. Tony may have DJed the main room. I can't really remember. But it was a little bit more of like a funky vibe and kind of disco edits and just had great house music. Big Chicago house as well. And the main room was very... which wasn't quite my thing.
Yeah.
You'd have loved it. and it was like... Trade was like a sea of topless guys, and I almost feel like I grew up there. That's when I was like, okay, and that's when I really, really got into house music. Mm.
Yeah. I love that. Smoking Joe, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, she's still around. I think
still around. Yeah,
yeah, glitter box and stuff. I think she does. She does for the Defective Crew. Yeah,
I used to work. I used to run the podcast at Space in Ibiza. I used to work with the guy that ran it, and we would record DJ sets like every Sunday for We Love, and she was like one of the residents, or she played quite a lot, and I loved her music.
Right.
Absolutely loved it.
I when I was 21, I went to New York for 3 months. I studied and I went over to New York to do a work placement for 3 months.
What were you studying?
I went to London College of Fashion.
Oh, really?
I
knew about this. I read about this about you.
I just knew I wanted to do something really gay.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was working in the fashion industry. While I was studying, I was started dressing up and working in nightclubs and then throwing my own parties, throwing my own raves while I was at school. And so that's sort of where the Jodie Harsh thing came along. And then... but at 20, it might have been 20, it might have been just because I think I was under the legal drinking age, but I went to New York for 3 months and started hanging out with a gang over there in clubs every night while I was in the workplace. So I was going out to see like Honey Dijon play in like the clubs and stuff before she really hit it big. She's also been around a long time. And so I remember hearing like Honey sets. Mm. Oh my God. Like, was it Twilo? Is that...
Yeah,
that's in New York.
I don't think so. Twilo.
That may have shot quite a few years ago, but clubs like that, and you know, you'd go and hear Honey play, and I was like, oh right, that's DJing, right? Got it. Yeah. These marathon sets, and you know, something so cool about New York, and so I really was influenced a lot by the New York clubbing scene.
Yeah,
and then I could literally save up all my money and go backwards and forwards. Every 6 months.
How good is New York?
Oh my, it's the best. I mean, Londoner born and bred.
Yeah.
And, you know, London is my heart, but New York is just the most, it's the best city in the world, isn't it?
I agree. Like, I lived there I did like 4 months there. But it's the city that I always go to if I have time to go and chill out somewhere and relax.
Totally.
It's something so special.
Something's really magic on the streets there, and I love its grit and all those you know, all the stuff that New York is obviously famous for, and it's housed, you know, my reference point clubs, whether it's Studio 54 or the Paradise Garage or the Loft, or the, you know, all the it's that sort of tiny island has like encapsulated everything that I love about club culture and music and all that kind of stuff. So it's like a constant reference point. I have been to America for a few years now because of COVID, and God, I miss it.
Get your ass out here. It's amazing.
So you're in Detroit. You live in Detroit.
Yeah, I go between Detroit and Somerset in the UK. Like,
oh, amazing.
Chalk and cheese.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I've been to Detroit. Never been.
Yeah, Detroit's an interesting city. It's had its ups and downs over the years. A lot more downs than ups. But there's a huge festival here called Movement, which I'm not too sure if you've heard of, but it's like the biggest techno festival in North America, really. And the Paxhow guys, they do a really tight ship of running some dope parties. But the scene as itself is quite small, just because the lack of population. A lot of people left, so like it was like 1.2 million population, now it's like 600,000.
Right, okay.
So like
it's
very raw, like it's a very very harsh city.
I'm a big fan of Chicago as well.
Chicago's like 4 hours away. It's really close.
By car.
Right.
Yeah, obviously a big fan of the greats that came from Chicago, and
Paul Johnson, rest in peace, motherfucker. Yeah.
I think Frankie was from Chicago, right?
I think he was. I've got to Google this because my history is not good.
Derek Carter's over there. You know all the
Derek's amazing.
The Housey boys were over there.
Such a nice dude, Frankie Knuckles. See, that's the thing is I. When I first started playing record, I started with like soulful funky house. Chicago.
Yeah.
Of course. And that was kind of my inroads. So like Sam Divine.
Yeah.
She was Miss Divine. I used to buy my records from her because she's from she's locally from me. In the UK, and she was like on the whole funky house, soulful house tip. And the guys that I was DJing with in Bristol were all on this like soulful house trip. So that was kind of my in to like actual DJing.
Got it. Motion in Bristol.
Motion's fun, yeah. I've actually just been booked to play a gay club in Bristol called Dare 2.
Cool.
Which...
Many gay clubs have you over the years?
I've not.
Have to get you booked for some more.
I really want to play some.
Yeah.
Like
I program this. I kind of own/program/curate this party called Feel It, which is Friday nights at O'Meara in London. We started just as soon as we could get back into the clubs after the pandemic.
Yeah.
We've had some quite interesting booking. We just had Eats Everything a couple of weeks ago, and
legend.
We've got some really good people coming out. So maybe come play.
I'd love to. What's I guess for anybody that's not been to a gay club.
Yeah.
What is it about gay clubs that are special?
I guess the fact that there's a lot of joy in gay clubs. Mm. It's less about pulling, because a lot of
really,
but actually, I'm going to completely retract that and maybe say it's more about pulling.
It's all about pulling, isn't it?
It's purely about pulling and nothing else. Not the music, nothing. I don't know. A great club's a great club, isn't it? And I think it's more to do with the crowd and the people that are there that makes it different. But that's such an interesting question that I've never really thought about before, like what actually makes, I guess as well, the fact that for so long, so many people in that room, and historically as well, just in gay world, people haven't been able to be themselves. Yeah. They haven't been what society, you know, would like them to be. Like I was saying, how I felt like the odd one out in the playground. And I guess that's why gays like to party so hard, probably because they're just, you know, allowed to kind of do what they want after maybe hiding for such a long time, which I know is a thing that straight people won't be able to completely identify with, but I personally speaking, I just remember walking into that club, a gay club, for the first time, and just the feeling was a sigh of relief that there was a room full of people, full of thousands of people that were like me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't have to hide from that, and I, from myself, and didn't, and it was just a sense of relief.
No, I love that. I remember playing an after party, the most random city ever, in Columbus, Ohio. And it was during Pride. And I got asked to play at some warehouse after party. And I went and played. And literally, it was just like a gay party. And like, it started with like nobody there. And then I just didn't really look up. And like half an hour later, it was literally just a bunch of dudes with their shirts off necking each other. And it was like it was like the most kind of liberating feeling for everybody there, that it was just like, you could just do what you want. You could be who you are. Whereas I think in straight clubs, there's kind of a bit of like a, sometimes depending on like, there's going to be like a couple of like really hot girls and every dude's trying to like be around those two girls, if you know what I mean. And it's a very, like, especially in dance music, it's a very male dominated scene.
Totally.
And it's like, unless you go see like MK play or something like that, where it's very female dominated, it's very, I can imagine being a woman in a straight club sometimes being quite fucking annoying. But
I'm seeing my, as I'm played on the radio and dance shows and stuff a lot more now, I'm seeing my, when I do one of my shows, so not at a gay club, but when you're buying a ticket from me, I'm definitely seeing a more diverse crowd.
I love that.
Yeah, of course, when I started out, of course it was, you know, a room full of gays and girls.
Yeah.
And now I'm totally seeing, you know, straight couples and stuff at my shows, which is, I love to connect with a really broad audience. Like I was saying about how punk that is, and how I do think that we should be living in a world where everyone is equal. Are we ever going to get there? Don't know. But it's nice to see stuff diversifying. You know, festival. I was at Creamfields last year, and of course, when I was booked, I thought, God, that's going to be really, really straight, isn't it? Isn't that? This is the time when I finally get bottled. Get there. There's loads of gays there and stuff. And it's you can slowly see things opening up a lot more to fully diverse audiences, which is really, really exciting. And of course, at the same time as that, there are still countries, there's a list of countries on this planet where it's illegal to be gay.
It's fucked.
There are countries where you can get your hands chopped off or your head chopped off for literally being like me.
Yeah.
4 hours away on a plane from where I live.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's always at the front of my mind as well. That we're so lucky.
Don't play in Russia.
No, and I have done before, but not for years. Don't play in, you know, Saudi.
Fuck that.
There are places where I'm obviously not going to go, but
it's weird that, isn't it? It's so weird to think that there's places like that.
Absolutely.
It just doesn't make sense.
Equality is at the root of house music, of course, and dance music, full stop. I mean, that's a huge part of it, isn't it? And
this Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, and of course, also dance music, arguably, but was, you know, pretty much invented by the gays.
It was.
The gays and POC people and Latin folk, you know, it's...
yeah, a bunch of gay black people.
Fab, yes. Right. Yeah, so it's sort of like upholding that. So.
Have you seen the documentary Maestro?
No, I don't think so.
I'm going to send it to you. You'll love it. In fact, there's a couple of documentaries I'm going to send you. I think one of them's called Maestro, which is based on the New York scene, Paradise Garage.
I've never seen it. That sounds like something you'd love should have been very aware of.
You'll love it.
Yeah, okay.
I'll send you it. And then there's another one about voguing in New York.
Paris is Burning.
Yes.
I know that inside out. Yeah.
I was listening to that on the plane, watching that on the plane the other day. It's so good.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. So many of those people died shortly after that.
Right.
Yeah. AIDS and, you know, murders or whatever. Yeah, so many of the cast. Another fascinating fact, the older queen in that video, who's sort of mother of the house, can't remember her name. Is she an extravaganza? I can't remember, but she's, you know, she was the one that's saying, if you shoot an arrow and it goes real high, hooray for you. She was found dead in her apartment a few years after, maybe 10 years after Paris is Burning came out. And they found in her closet a mummified body that they reckon had been there for sort of 20 years.
What the fuck?
Yes. I know. She's obviously killed someone and mummified that. I mean, isn't that amazing?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Fucking wild. Yeah, that was in the crack days as well. So there was a lot. There was a huge crack scene back in the day.
Yeah.
Mummified body. Crack. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. When was the whole first time you started to do drag? I want to know about this.
Yeah, I started dressing up when I was 18, moved to London, went to university, hanging out with a load of friends who were also doing drag, and I'd see them get free drinks tickets or like skip the line to go into the club. Like the velvet rope would lift up for them at, you know, heaven or wherever we were going. And I was like, oh my God, you are famous. I want to do that too. Oh my God, you've been handed a drinks ticket.
So you pretty much did it for free drinks and free entry,
100%. Yeah, still had to play for the co-check. But I just thought, oh wow, that looks really fun. And I loved the, you know, playing with gender, and I loved the creativity that went into it and stuff and then I started throwing parties. I started organizing clubs and throwing little raves and stuff while I was studying to make my way through uni. And I even, you know, did the door at the End on a Thursday for a gay night they had called Discotheque. You know, used to pocket half the money, but you know, did all that, take bribes,
gotta pay the bills.
That's how I started, just by dressing up and running around nightclubs and working in various different forms within club culture.
I love that. How did the family take it?
Yeah, my mum at first couldn't really understand it, but now loves it.
Yeah.
My sister, who's a few years younger than me, also now loves it because she's seen that she can get free festival tickets. Like, oh, can you get me some tickets for Wilderness? I'm like, yes, I'm playing. I mean, it's like she definitely takes advantage of that. And my dad stopped talking to me.
Really?
Yeah, well, he don't speak at all.
That's rough.
Yeah.
How's that?
It's his problem more than it is mine.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. 100%. I'm pretty much, I've done all the therapy. I look at life from a glass half full point of view. And I'm fine with myself. I'm super comfortable in my skin. Everyone else is comfortable with me. So it's really not my
your issue.
I haven't made it my problem.
Yeah.
I accept it and move on. It's weird because my dad was a musician. Like he's sort of always played in little bands and
yeah.
you know, just small bands, nothing big. But so he'd go around gigging, and when I was a kid, we'd go around and do little beer festivals and things in Kent, you know, and we'd like sit on the side of the stage watching my dad perform and stuff. So he definitely comes from a creative place and a musical place. So it's really weird that he doesn't, that he just never, he just doesn't like what I do or who I am, any, you know, whatever. Anyway.
Life goes on, I guess. You just got to keep doing what you do.
He had an amazing record collection as well. I remember being like a kid and he was introducing me to the music of like Bjork or what would he used to play? Like he loved funk and soul and he loved dance music as well. So
was it when you became gay, but when you kind of spoke about that, or was it when you started doing drag?
Actually, both. We fell out two times. The first time when he found out I was gay, which was completely by mistake, I was dragged out of the closet by, it's a whole another story for another day, but by a school teacher.
Oh, really?
So, it's fucked up, man. Yeah. But when that exploded, that was our first falling out. But then we lived under the same roof for a couple more years. Mm. And then my parents got divorced. And then later on, he eventually saw me like being interviewed on some TV show or something like that. And he turned to his wife and went, "Is that my son?" And she knew. And she was like, "Yeah." And since that day, we haven't spoken.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's all these things that, like, you know, like Glastonbury Festival. He used to go to Glastonbury every year.
Yeah.
I've played Glastonbury. And, you know, like, he loved football. I've played Wembley.
Yeah.
Like, open for someone at Wembley. And all these things, all these like life achievements that my dad's not sharing with me. And like I said, this is not a boohoo story. Like,
No, not at all.
No. But it's so dumb, isn't it? It's just so stupid.
Well, I think the thing is like, you hear about this a lot. And I think it's a generational thing as well, to a certain extent. But realistically, it's, without sounding disrespectful to your dad, it's just his loss.
Totally.
And you've processed it, by the sounds of it, you've processed it and probably still are processing it to in certain situations. But at the end of the day, he's missing out on you. And I'm not a parent, but as a parent, if all I can imagine is that I'd want my kids to be a part of my life for my whole life, and kind of see them grow and kind of celebrate them as who they are and what they're doing, whether that's working behind a desk job and doing whatever or playing Wembley. Like, it's definitely his loss.
Totally. Yeah. I'm really at peace with it.
Yeah.
I've worked through all of that. So
yeah, I can imagine.
It's not,
So when you're writing music, I mentioned about the kind of like the disco influence. Mm. Do you listen to a lot of samples and kind of take it from that, or do you like let's build from scratch?
Both ways. Yeah. So yes, I've used samples in quite a lot of the tracks that I've put out. Mm. You know, sometimes we'll just hear something and think, and it will just stay in the back of my mind for 6 months, and then eventually I pull it back out of that drawer and just start playing about with it. It always takes me, I never really make stuff as soon as I have the idea for it. It has to sort of ruminate in my head a bit.
Yeah.
For some reason it has to stew for a good few months.
Yeah.
And then one day I'll be like, right, today I'm going to make that.
Yeah.
So play with samples a lot, make stuff out the box a lot, from scratch as well. Bassline, build up drums, build up perks, build up sound effects. And I songwrite a lot now as well. So that's been quite interesting. I signed a publishing deal with Universal as well.
Amazing. Recently.
So that's sort of really helping me get into amazing rooms with amazing co-writers and stuff as well.
Yeah.
And so I'm also approaching the songwriting in different ways as well. So whereas before I'd make a track and then maybe bring in a singer and we'd write something on top of the track. Now, I don't know if you've heard of a singer called Frances. She's an amazing singer-songwriter. She works a lot with S.G. Lewis. And, you know, she's written with Jessie Ware and people like that. And we've been doing a lot of sessions together recently, and she is incredible at the piano. She will literally like play a chord followed by a second goal, and it's like it was suddenly like everything was start shaping up like straight away. And so when I'm writing with her, for example, we'll write literally onto piano,
yeah,
and then I'll take it and build around that,
yeah.
But we're literally writing a song through just chords.
I love that,
yeah, melody. So that's a new way of working for me, which I really really enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, do you prefer working with people?
I do. Yeah, I do. I do a lot of my production myself.
Yeah,
sometimes we'll go in and collaborate with someone else. Usually later down the line. I get my stuff mixed and mastered, obviously, outside of here. But songwriting, I always like to work with one other person.
Yeah.
I like it to be two people in a room writing a song together, or three, but usually two, me and someone else. Just because bouncing ideas around, and it just feels a bit more exciting. I'm a very collaborative person in everything I do. But I build tracks. I like to produce alone for most part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to work with other people at the moment, like on, because I think for a huge part of my career, and I'm sure you kind of have come across this, there's this massive thing of like, you have to do everything yourself. And
I think that's a bit outdated, though.
It is now. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I think there was like probably 10 years of writing music where there was this, like, you have to do everything. And then over the last like 4 years, I've been like, well, no, I'm not the best at everything. I want to I want to get the best people possible, to make it really good. And realistically, it's just making trying to make the best possible music for everybody else. It's not just for me; it's so everyone else can enjoy it.
Totally, I think it's very music snob as well to be like, I have to do absolutely everything by myself so I can fully own this. And it's like, in your head, you know, the collaboration is part of music, and it's just like, you know, if you're an amazing singer, when you you'll probably have backing singers when you and a sound guy when you're performing live, you know, and you know, for technical help or whatever. Mm. So I do think that in any, you know, if you're an artist, you know, you look at I don't know, a Damien Hirst or Andy Warhol or whatever. Yeah. It's like, not every brushstroke is by or whatever is a lot of its collaboration.
No, totally.
Whatever. So I do think it's a little out of date, this whole notion of absolutely everything has to be me.
I think the thing that I struggle with the most is when people claim that it's them and it's not.
Oh, like a ghost.
Yeah. Or not even that. Like there's a lot of producers out there. A lot of like DJs out there that release music that they don't give the person who made the record credit. They didn't even sit in the room, and then they build a career around that music. And obviously you don't know what deals happen behind closed doors, but I think that's the issue, is that it's telling people that you have to do everything yourself, whereas like if I don't know, I can't really say names, but like if this person that's like massive that was like, yeah, you know what, I actually have somebody else write my music for me, or we work on a collaborative way, I think that will open the door to so many kids that are like, damn, I can like get somebody to help me, I can, and I think it will then take the stigma out of the industry, where it takes that snobbery out of it all.
Totally, because in any industry, there's teamwork involved in creating a thing or a piece of art or a product or whatever.
Yeah,
like it's a lot of the time is teamwork. Yeah. So I do agree with that. Yeah.
Fashion. I want to talk to you about. I love fashion, although I literally always wear this. You like never see me in any other clothes apart from this. But like, fashion is for me one of my biggest goals in my life to kind of be involved with. Right. Which not many people know about, to be fair.
I wouldn't have guessed that about you, but that's cool.
How do you still do anything in it apart from yourself?
I mean, I tend to get booked to DJ some fashion-y things, you know, certain, like, you know, a Versace party or a, you know, a fashion weeky type things or British Fashion World type things or whatever. But other than that, not really. I keep an eye on it.
I have
quite a strong identity, visual identity, I guess. I developed the hair's always the same. The, you know, that I have a, I have my vibe, my look, you know, my mask, whatever you want to. But I don't. I don't make or design or no, I don't. But I'm very interested.
Did you ever make?
When I was at uni, I was studying to do styling and creative direction and a bit of journalism as well. So that side of fashion rather than actually making clothes. But it's a funny world, the fashion world. It's interesting.
I think it's very similar to the music industry.
Definitely.
Where it's like you can be hustling for fucking years and not get anywhere, and then all of a sudden one person wears something and it's game over from there. You're like,
Totally. Sometimes I used to, like, you know, go to a fashion show and just think, oh my God, this is so ridiculous and whatever. But then those, you can sort of see those ideas then filtering up through, you know, whether it's the high street or, and it's the same with music. It's like a sort of a sound of the underground, but suddenly 3 years later, you'll hear something in the charts and be like, I know exactly where that came from. Well, same with club culture, you know, these ideas being born, isn't it? And kind of becoming bigger in mainstream culture.
Yeah, well, the last thing for me was Rebuke's Along Came Polly. I don't know if you know that record. It's the one with like loads of weird percussion-y sound.
Right.
It came out on Hot Creations a few years ago, and literally like he created a sound that like everyone tried to copy. And you hear it all the time. You hear it, it's just fashionable, right? Things become fashionable, and it's the same with fashion. It's like when Virgil did all of his like drawing on things, and then you like go to Burberry and you're like, wow, Burberry just tried to copy everything that Virgil's doing at Louis Vuitton or Off-White.
And
realistically, I think when I kind of noticed that, I was like, wow, this is just how people make money. And it's like, okay, this is making loads of money right now, so we have to do this. Because everyone wants this. But
industrial.
Exactly. But the thing that I like is when people stick to what they're doing and just like ride it out. And we're like, no, we're fucking sticking to it.
Totally. Yeah. Like a sound. Like when someone doesn't water down their sound or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
It's important to do that, I think. Although I think it takes longer to kind of build a fan base and to grow your career, I think if you're really true to yourself and really true to what you love and not just kind of like bunny hopping around to different sounds and different kind of fads, I think
the right people are very sensitive to authenticity. And we mentioned Honey Dijon earlier. Honey's always stuck to her guns. Always, you know, made the music she wants to make, played the places she wants to play. There's no selling out from Honey Dijon. No. She hustled. She's been on the grind for however. I mean, God, I started going to her shows 15 years ago.
Forever,
You know, and she's still got the same mentality, and her world is growing, and her personal career is growing because of that authenticity that people are latching onto, and it does take a minute sometimes. Interesting. People can see. I think people can see a sellout a mile off. You know.
Yeah. Definitely.
You're just flashing the pan anyway. Like if you hop around trends, you're just a flap. You're gonna just be a trend.
Unless you keep it up. Like there's certain artists that are like smashing the kind of pop scene right now. And like, let's say for instance, Joel, right? Like Joel, like he's a good mate, but like he had his first big record and everyone was like, oh, he's gonna fall off the wagon now. Yeah. And he just kept that up. And he's just straight up pop.
And he loves it.
He loves it.
Tell you what was interesting. I was on his Wikipedia recently, and I noticed, because it's, is it Sorry, the track that you're talking about, his big crossover moment where he had the big hit?
Yeah.
Yeah. There were about 15 singles before that.
Oh, yeah. I helped write some of them.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't really aware of that. So I was just found myself on his Wikipedia page. And I was like, wow, he's really, really, that's a long career.
Honestly, I said it from the day I met him was, I got introduced to him to write some music years ago. And that was when he'd just come off the Geordie Shore. His like ex-girlfriend was on Geordie Shore. So he was like the DJ on Geordie Shore. Yeah. And we were like, he was in my studio and we were talking and he was like, I just want to be like a cool DJ. And I was like, dude, you're never going to be a cool DJ. Like, I'm sorry, but like you're going to have to change everything. You're going to have to change your name. You're going to have to change the way you look. Like, you're just do what makes you happy, if you know what I mean. Don't try and be cool because of it. And it took a few years, and then he came out with Sorry, and it was just a smasher. And it's so nice to see, because what he's doing is so him.
Totally. And also, nicest guy in the world.
Oh, legend.
I won't hear a bad word said about Joel Corey. He is so nice and is loving every moment of what he's doing.
And he works so hard. When I was working with him, he was literally touring like Oceanas, Prisms, like every weekend.
Like three a night.
Yeah.
Like,
And like he made an amazing career out of it. And you can't knock that at all. Whether you like the music or not is something completely different. Yeah. That's your opinion. Okay. But you can't knock somebody that's willing to fucking work hard.
Certainly a lot of people like the music, you know. He's in the top five all the time. Clearly that there's a formula there that's really hitting and working.
Totally. So, is that a goal for you?
I do think that it would be, I have signed to a major, so it would be great to hit the charts.
Yeah.
I think there would be something quite fab and quite an achievement for where I come from and queer culture and stuff.
Yeah, massively.
I do have, you know, like if I had a top 10 record or something, and you know what, I won a Brit or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it would be nice to, queer the mainstream a little bit, a little bit more, go even further with that. You know, I'm doing promo at the moment for a record I got out this week. And, you know, I'm at Capital FM and I'm at these like quite, you know, these doors were well and truly closed for me until a couple of years ago, or for someone like me. Someone like me wouldn't get a look in. It's like with Drag Race really doing well now. I mean, it took them 10 years pitching for Drag Race. Yeah. Rue told me it took them 10 years of pitching until they finally got it on TV. And all the TV channels that they were going to were turning it down, saying, drag's great, we love drag, but it's not for it's not going to work on TV. It's a club thing, you know, or it's an underground thing, or it's a bar thing, or it's a gay thing, or whatever. And so I do think that if I was to get a top 10 record, it would be quite genius. it would be kind of genius.
It would be amazing.
It would be quite fab. That isn't the only reason. You know, I'm not just saying this, I just want to get good music out that I'm proud of, that I would choose to listen to and latch onto if it wasn't me making it, out to an audience it gives them some joy. Totally. And I see them at the show and they're dancing and they're saying the lyrics back at me, or they're just clearly in a joyful moment because of this music. That's what it's all about, right? Those little moments where, you know, aside from the career goals moments and all, aside from ambitious moments and stuff, you know, we'd be fakes if we didn't just love those moments where we're giving people, you know, it's a service, isn't it? It's a duty. You know, I felt like that when we were doing all the streams in lockdown. I'd be like getting my makeup on, and after sorting through my records, ready for a live stream, I'd be thinking, this is my duty. I've got to entertain the masses. You know,
it's so true.
Like, what I was put on this earth to do.
Right. Everyone kind of has always kind of supported us by paying to come to clubs.
Yes,
and during lockdown, like, all we could do is really give back. I didn't give back in streams. Mine was just starting a podcast.
Absolutely, which people listen to and absolutely love.
Yeah. So
yeah.
You do, and I think realistically, community in this is the main thing, right? And especially where you're coming from, like, community is so important in your culture as well, and kind of where you're at. And I think that's the thing that a lot of us, I can't speak for everyone, but for me, is like, I can also forget that when I'm like writing music and releasing records, and you're like, oh fuck, it needs to do better, it needs to do better, it needs to do better, and then you're like, oh, it's only done 1 million streams, and then you're like, fuck, it's like only 1 million streams.
Yeah, it's, I know. And then of course, a couple of years ago, you know, if I, for example, got a track now with millions of streams, that's amazing. I'd want it to be double. Completely lose sight of the fact that 2 years ago, you know, 100,000 streams would have been nice.
Yeah,
but that's just ambitiousness, isn't it? And that's sort of forgetting that. I think that's also a creative thing.
Totally.
Never really being satisfied with results and going on to the next thing. While I go on to the, I'm already, you know, thinking about my next single campaign while I'm in this one.
It's
right now.
Mental, it's like, isn't it?
I just jump onto the next thing. I think that's a creative thing. That's restlessness, I think.
I think it's that constantly want for more as well. And it's not a greed for me, because I don't know about you, but obviously it is financially driven, because we all need to pay our bills, and I want to grow a nice life for me in the future, and there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, the finance side of it always seems to come last when it comes to like wanting career success.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like to think about what would be left behind. Like what's the story? What have I left in place?
The legacy.
That's the word. Yeah. What is the legacy? And I'm talking about I die.
We're so egotistical.
Yeah, I know. No, but like, what is, I guess. Oh, maybe I am. As I say, sat here in a face full of makeup and a wig. Maybe.
No,
maybe,
I hear what you're saying, though. I'm the same.
I'd never release anything that I wasn't really proud of. It would destroy my soul to put something out.
Oh, I've done that.
I was like, ooh, you have.
I've done that. I've released there's one record that to be fair, at the time, I loved it.
Yeah. And then that's fine.
And I fucking hate it now.
Yeah. But that's retrospect, isn't it? That's a dangerous thing as well. I try not to look at numbers. That's dangerous.
Yeah. What's your release on release day?
Horrific.
It's the worst.
Horrific. Oh, the day before release day. I hate it. I hate that. The vocals aren't loud enough.
Yeah.
The hi-hats are too loud. You know, like I said, it's no one's going to like it. Yeah. It's going to bomb. It's going to be mortifying. And I completely lose sight on how it felt making it and how excited I was like the previous week about it.
Yeah.
And then it comes out, and when you start getting reactions from people, first of all online and then in real life, when you get to play it out, you forget all that. But I get very nervous around release day, because as artists, putting a piece of work out there is fucking scary.
Yeah.
You know, it the insecurities is. All come out.
It is. And there's that saying that when I try and tell myself it, but it doesn't always work. But it's like, once you put your music out, it's not your music, it's everybody else's.
Yeah. And
it's up to everybody else to kind of, what will be to a certain extent.
Yeah. But it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah. There's since having my own record label and releasing music on my own record label, like I've enjoyed releasing like 2 records.
Because
it's like so scary.
It's scary, yeah. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so people just hear the final product.
Yeah.
They don't realise that final master, the journey that track's taken, could have been 3 years ago since that, you know, shoved into a folder on the desktop or whatever. Like the journey of a record, and then, you know, just the... And it's all the other things as well. It's like getting the artwork ready.
Yeah.
And I really love all those other creative elements that come into it. But it's, you put so much into it that when you do release it, you suddenly just start second guessing it, maybe.
Totally.
And then like 2 days after it's come out, you're like, yeah, I love it. you're like back to like, yes, people are fucking eating up this record. This is great. Yeah. What's the next one?
The worst thing is when your Spotify rap comes up of the rest of the whole year and you're your favorite artist.
Oh, yeah. Of course. But of course you are, because, you know, you've got to like...
Got to get the streams up.
Totally got to get shoes. I've got to see how it sounds on the Spotify. The Spotify Wrapped is pretty dangerous for artists as well, because I think we just compare ourselves.
Yeah,
to each other.
I never post it.
Oof, there's it's certain, like, that's the danger zone.
There's certain things that I try to stay clear from, and that's talking about a sold out show, and
right.
That's talking about like Spotify rap. Things like that.
Right.
There's like certain milestones that I might talk about in future, but
to be proud of achievements.
Yeah, and just be like, thank you. I really appreciate it. But I think certain things when we know it's not necessarily to say thank you.
Yeah, it's from an ego point of view. Yeah, for sure.
I try and tame it down a little bit. Inside is inside, and I know it, but I think there's like, how can I say that this show sold out without being a dickhead about it and being like
how do you say a show
I
sold
generally
out?
Just say like, I won't put a post up.
Okay.
I'll put a story up going, heads up, tickets are only available at the door now.
Okay.
And be like, done. But I spoke about this on the Spencer Brown podcast. There's also like a business side of this where you want other promoters to see that you're selling out shows.
Totally. There's the whole business side of the game as well as the creative. But we have to be.
You have to do both. And I don't know. I think there's a time and place. I don't think my fans give a fuck if I sell out a show.
No, they don't.
Let's be honest. How many fans compared to promoters or business people were following me? Like 90% fans. So like, why the fuck do they? It's actually probably pissed them off that they've sold because they haven't bought a ticket.
Right.
So it's like, well, hang on. I don't know. It's really nice on the Spotify rap. I don't know about you, when you see people like post that you're in their top 10.
So nice.
It's weird.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
It's funny
to me.
Who else there? I get some. I'm in some very odd groupings.
I bet.
Sometimes it's the obvious ones, and other times it's like, really? How bizarre!
I love it though.
How broad are your tastes, or you know, whatever? But it's cool.
So, what's this new single out coming out? Because this will come out in a few weeks. So the record's out.
Yeah.
When this
the record's out.
Yeah.
It's called Good Time.
Good Time.
I'll send it to you after.
Easy.
It's bonkers. Yeah, it's completely bonkers. It's a bit Armin van Helden vibe.
Love it.
It's a little, I kind of described it the other day as if Basement Jacks made a banging disco record.
Love it.
You can hear that UK influence in it. There's like all sorts of like little record scratchy breaks and crazy sound effects, and it's slapped pretty hard.
Sick.
Yes, mad. It's a pretty mad record. It's a very catchy hook, I think, sung hook. Good time.
I can't wait to hear it.
I think you'll like it. It's cool.
And it's out now. Go listen to it.
It's out now. Go stream it.
go make some pennies for us.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up. We've just done an hour. It's gone bloody quick.
Thank
you so much for coming on. It's been really... I know we've spoke on... We've slid into each other's DMs over the last year, but it's so nice.
And I'm such a fan of yours.
Thank
as well.
You so
I love
much.
Your, I love your tunes.
So. I'm back in. I'm actually playing in London in April. So let's try and catch up. Let's go grab some food.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, cool. I'd love to. Wicked. Definitely.
Keep safe and good luck with everything. Keep it up. Oh, beforehand, how do people follow you?
Oh, at Jody Harsh, JodieHarsh. That's Instagram, Twitter, all the.
Can
all those usual
before we pages. Go, sorry, this is a question I've wanted to ask you.
How'd I come up with my name?
Yeah. I know
someone gave it to me. I don't know. Drag names are often quite sort of punny and whatever.
Yeah.
And when I was 18, a friend of mine, because my real name begins with a J, so I got given the name and I'm kind of stuck.
You've got a good real surname as well. I'm into that.
my real surname is Clark.
I same.
I know. Love it. Got to stick together. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Keep safe. Keep doing what you're doing. You're killing it.
Thank you so much. See you later.
Thank you. And that's a wrap. Absolutely love that conversation. That was amazing. Hope you enjoyed it. Please share with your friends, your family. Do your thing. Have a great week. Keep safe. See you next time.
Some people take the straight path in life. But at Arizona State University, we respect your twists and turns. They make our online students more driven to excel in their professional lives. That's why our personalized suite of services empowers you with innovative resources and staff that sticks with you. Make your next turn with one of our 300-plus programs at ASU, number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Visit us at asuonline.asu.edu to learn more.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.